Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Anyway, with you in the studio tonight, it's Ian,
Jay,
and Joa.
You know, something else that has been free for a very long time here at Free Talk Live has been our free-to-air satellite channel over North America, and we also have another one over Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, so the majority of the continent. And it has been broadcasting the Liberty Radio Network for more than 10 years. It was actually 2010 when the channel over North America got its start. And then it was 2012 when the Sub-Saharan African channel got its start. And it was 2015 when we started doing fundraising to support those channels. And I'm certainly grateful to everybody that has donated to that fundraiser over the years. I think we started doing a Patreon in 2017, and it didn't work out, you know? Not everything works out that you try to do in life, and this one didn't have the level of support that was necessary to see it through. We didn't have a lot to raise. We could have, you know, if we'd raised $1,000, that would have covered both channels. $1,000 a year, or sorry, $1,000 a month, that would have covered both channels, but wasn't to be seen. We've got just over $200 per month right now, which isn't enough to cover one of the channels, so I had to make the tough decision to go ahead and terminate one of those two channels, and I decided that I was going to terminate the North American channel because a couple different reasons. One, the fact is, well, we can't afford it. But number two, in addition to that, North America's got plenty of internet access. Like, if you look at the World Fact Sheet or whatever, there's a website that actually does a really good job at covering what areas of the world have internet access and to what extent. You know, North America is very well interneted. And so, considering that now you've got Starlink technology that's available, this low Earth orbit satellite technology that has made rural internet access incredibly accessible. I mean, it used to be you could get satellite internet if you were out in the woods or, you know, way out from a city, but it was terrible. And now it's pretty awesome. And I can speak from experience. We actually have Starlink at this location. It's used as a backup. It's not our primary internet connection because we aren't out, you know, in the woods. We are in a city here, but I just wanted to try it out and, you know, see how it was. And it's actually pretty fast, and it's not particularly expensive considering what it can do. So for somebody that lives out in the middle of nowhere, as long as there's a view of the sky, you can pretty much get very high speed internet access. So anyway, we're talking about the satellite channel. It's going to end at the end of June at this point, the one over North America. And yeah, I figure if you really want to get Free Talk Live, you really want to listen to LRN.FM. Almost everyone in North America has internet access at this point, so it's kind of extraneous, kind of unnecessary to have that satellite channel.
Is there any idea how many people listen to us on satellite?
It's impossible to know. I mean, right. Every now and then we'll get a caller who says they're listening on that channel, so I'm sure there's going to be a handful of people that are upset about it, but I'd be shocked if those people don't have an internet subscription at this point. So to them, I'm sorry. Look, we just, you know, not enough people backed it. You know, if people don't back a thing, why should we do it?
Yep,
that's kind of how I see it. But people, you know, some people did back it. I mean, we do have about 20 people who support the satellite Patreon, which is you can find over, there's a link to it over at sat.lrn.fm, where you can just go straight to fund, fund.lrn.fm, and it'll take you right there. And, you know, we ask $2 a month. There are 20 people that are associated with that. I don't know how many of them are going to stay or go based on this particular news, but presuming they all stay, then we're half the way there to covering the African channel, which I'm going to continue.
Nice.
Because Africa is still not very connected. You just looked up the recent numbers. They're definitely more connected now than they've ever been, but still, Africa is at just under 50%. So in some countries in Africa, it's like 12% or 15%. So on average, though, it's like 46% of the African population, some 600 million people, have no access to the internet.
My favorite place to watch or listen is on the Odyssey channel. That's where I like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're definitely going to need a good internet connection for that because it's a video stream. So I suspect, you know, people in poorer areas of the world probably are going to listen to the show more than watch it. Like in some areas of Africa, I know they actually pay by the gigabyte. So you have to actually go and buy internet access in advance. You don't get to pay later.
Right,
You got to pay for what you want to use in advance of doing it. We used to have a guy call the show. He said he would travel 45 minutes from his town to the capital city of Cameroon, Africa, where he would then borrow a friend's laptop, pay for a prepaid internet card just so he could listen to Free Talk Live and call into the show. So that's the level of dedication some of those guys have out there. And they're more likely to have these free-to-air satellite systems because they don't have cable, right? So they don't have the traditional kind. They can't afford to pay for a satellite service per month, so they use the free-to-air system, and that's how they listen to this show. So that one's going to keep going. And like I said, we're over $200 a month right now, and that can be paid for with $400 a month. So we're half the way there, and hopefully that one's going to stay on for the foreseeable future, at least until Africa becomes as well-connected as most of the rest of the world. So that's the current status of the Free Talk Live satellite channels. I wanted to, you know, put it out there as quickly as possible. According to an article over at CoinDesk, Signature Bank is now for sale. So the feds have seized Signature Bank, and they're trying to get some big bank to come in and swoop in and take over the accounts.
Yeah, right. The federal government loves consolidating industries because it's just way easier to control them.
Well, that's one of the things that Aaron Day pointed out this week. We had Aaron on the show. He's a Free Stater, early mover here for the Free State Project. He's running as a Republican candidate for president.
Okay.
So if you missed that interview, you can definitely go grab that. I think it was Tuesday night. Highly recommend that because he's like the only thing going for people that actually care about liberty. If you want, you know, if you actually want to back a candidate at the presidential level that is actually a principled libertarian, this guy's doing it. He's running as a Republican. But he pointed out that what's happening here is as these regional banks are being threatened, their stocks are falling. People are selling off the stocks, and what they're doing is they're pulling money out of the regional banks. They're not doing what you guys were talking about, which is buying silver or gold or maybe getting cryptocurrency.
They're putting it all into like JP Morgan.
Right.
JP Morgan got the record amount of deposits. I forget the number, but I heard this morning on some podcast I was listening to, Valuetainment there. They were talking about, and this is from yesterday, but they were talking about how JP Morgan reported the record amount of hundreds of billions of dollars just getting deposited into JP Morgan out of regional banks. The thing is, the money in the bank does not belong to you. It's not yours.
As soon as you gave it to them, it became theirs.
It is an asset, and you are a depositor in a bank is basically the first one to lose in the bank. You are an unsecured, it's like an unsecured loan to the bank, basically. And it is their money. In fact, the money doesn't belong, it belongs to the Federal Reserve. It has their name all over
That's
you
true.
Know, this paper.
It's a debt note.
Yeah, they're debt notes. So it's not even real money. It's, you know, it's debt notes. And then second, they did away with the
evidence of the federal debt. That's exactly what that is. If the federal debt were paid off, that would mean all the money is gone.
And
out of circulation.
All the fiat dollars are gone out of circulation.
Yes. Let's pay off the debt then.
And then
we
just got to stop having faith in this fiat system.
Indeed.
Which is, you know, one big thing you've been pushing for basically as long as I've known you, Ian, is, you know, the fiat system's corrupt. We need to get away from it. And this is why you became such a big fan of Bitcoin.
It's literally the most unholy thing in the world.
Well,
right?
it is modern day.
So you want to talk about defense for your church. The fiat is the most unholy thing.
Absolutely.
There you go. Done. Did you hear that?
Yeah, it is a modern day slave
system. That's why they raided this house 2 years ago, by the way. It's a 2 year anniversary of
the raid. Oh, it's against their God. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. And their God is Satan, apparently.
Whatever it
is. Well, just think all the federal employees, all the state employees, all federal and state employees are members of what I call the parasite working class.
Mm-hmm.
They are a parasite sector. Anybody that's in these highly regulated government industries, whether it's medical And, you know, don't be offended if you're a doctor and I refer to you as a parasite, but it is a parasite industry because the hospitals, for example, the reason they're so expensive is because they get all kinds of money from the state and they give these sweetheart contracts to companies like Stryker Industries, which, you know, Barbara Stryker is a Massachusetts politician. You know, her father started, you know, this business, and they're the ones who are selling like the $8,000 power hospital beds to the hospital for like $80,000.
Wow.
And then you got like, you know, this is why you'll see like bills where you'll have aspirin for $96. Mm-hmm. And these are, you know, pharmaceutical companies are selling all this stuff at, you know, 1,000x what it costs in the real market to buy them, yep, basically to the hospital. So, but getting back to this, all the banks are insolvent. They have no more reserve requirements. One guy that does a
that ended in, I think it was 2020 during the COVID thing. They used that zero as the excuse to get rid of the reserves.
So, so what's basically happened a lot with the banks too, I haven't heard anyone really talk about, is the way money velocity really happens, the way money is created into the economy is because of loans. So previous
which
to
by the banks, they're making those loans out of thin air. Now.
Out of thin air. And but so 2 years ago or 3 years ago, it was required that the bank for every, you know, I forget the numbers, but basically for every dollar they have on deposit, they could lend out like
$9, $10.
Well, $30 it was.
Oh, was it?
It went up to $30 or $29. For every $1 they have, they can create 29 out of thin air. And then all that has been done away with. So there isn't even, they don't even have to have any money on their on their books to create this. Well, now mortgage rates have gone up. The housing market is still super tight. So a lot of these a lot of the way money's getting created is by the housing market and, you know, housing mortgages being issued. Mm-hmm. And then they literally spin the money up out of nothing, you know, or 29/30 of it out of nothing. And now it's they spend 100% of it up out of nothing. Well, that's come to a serious stop, too. So there's a whole bunch of money just stopped getting sort of injected that way into the economy. But another way of
that's because many people don't want to take the mortgage at the rates that they're
mortgage
at today.
Yeah, well, the amount of mortgages that are being applied for are super low. I forget the numbers. Zero Hedge talks about this stuff all the time.
I saw something, I don't know, a few months ago saying that the amount of mortgages is down to where, like, the worst level during COVID. Because obviously when people were staying
everything
home, they
down,
weren't buying houses.
Yep.
And so it's like that level.
So now what we got going on, so there's that. And then the other thing that's happening is we have inflation. And then we also have the interest rates have been raised. So like the United States of America, for example, that has to pay that services debt, like their debt payments have like gone up in, you know, numbers that we can't understand. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. Trillions of dollars, million, hundreds of millions of dollars. So anyways, then you have all of this money basically going into the war over there. And, you know, the U.S. is just backing and funding this Ukrainian
nonsense.
Yeah,
$110 billion and counting going to Ukraine.
And so, so all that money is actually money getting printed out of thin air, but without it being loaned into existence. It's just getting basically created it into existence through some other vehicle I don't understand.
Numbers on a computer,
some other magic
button. which is, you know, further adding to inflation. So now they're bailing out these banks even more. What's all this money that's going to go into bailing out these banks? So now we're going to put all this money into the economy again, which is going to create more demand for supplies, but the money's going up so much more than the supplies. So New Hampshire has like this trust thing that they talk about, where basically you can create a New Hampshire trust, and the registered agent can be, you know, sort of nobody, and
not our co-host, but someone
It could just be a fictional entity. So,
I see.
So what they're talking about in the Pandora Papers was the you know, these I can't get to see.
And what is
before.
The Pandora Papers?
Do you know what that is, Joe, off the top of your head?
I don't know. He was describing it, but I didn't really get a gist of the detail of what he was saying.
They were basically
question.
Leaked documents about a corrupt bunch of corrupt government stuff, and he gets into this, Mike Gill, how with the Pandora Papers and what the Pandora Papers say about New Hampshire and $932 billion in a trust economy. So it is what they're talking about, like this trusted agent for this company, you know, Boston Bank and Trust or whatever, is registered in New Hampshire as a New Hampshire company. And basically the office is just an empty building, like Joe has said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the Pandora Papers, they talk about all this drug cartel money being laundered to all of these businesses. And every single business was just an empty office building, kind of like, if you don't know if you guys remember that movie, The Boiler Room, that came out years ago, where these guys were selling these penny stocks, and basically the only location they had was just an empty building. I mean, there was it was a pretty good movie. It came out in the 90s.
Let me just summarize it. What the Pandora Papers are, in October 2021, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists released 11.9 million leaked documents, 2.9 terabytes of data that exposed the secret offshore accounts of 35 world leaders, as well as more than 100 billionaires, politicians, corporate executives, celebrities, and business leaders. These documents have led an immense global impact and are essential for uncovering unethical or corrupt dealings among the wealthy and elite.
It doesn't really sound too shocking to me. I mean, everybody knows that these people have secret bank accounts that they funnel money into, right? This is just the proof of that,
right? Basically. And some of the names involved in the SVB are listed in these guys. Yes, especially the ones here in New Hampshire, the ones in New Hampshire have also hired the same lawyers as Epstein. I mean, there's no coincidence.
He gets into these things, and Ghislaine Maxwell was found, 25 miles from the New Hampshire State House in Bradford, New Hampshire, right up the road from where I live. And there's got to be a lot of local corruption for Ghislaine Maxwell to be hiding out there.
Yeah. And tucked away, that's pun intended, because that was the name of the place that Ghislaine Maxwell was hiding. It was called Tucked Away.
Oh, I've seen that sign before. I've driven by there.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a
small state. All right, so what's the main takeaway here from this Gill documentary?
This guy does weekly
because it's an hour long.
Yeah, he does a weekly podcast about this. Is Brandon O'Connell? But the big takeaway is that there's a massive drug cartel, and they're pushing fentanyl like crazy. And of course, tons of state employees are on the take. Tons of federal employees are on the take. I mean, I find it absolutely disgusting and reprehensible that the Crypto 6 event happened. And the fentanyl overdose deaths are like pretty extreme, I guess, in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very high state. You got all this
lots of heroin users.
Yeah, and you got all this crazy, drug addiction going on. And the FBI is putting all kinds of money into investigating people who have never, ever, not a single affidavit was filed in that court that you or anybody else injured anybody or stole anything from anybody.
That's true.
And yet we have all kinds of record amounts of people overdosing in this country from the fentanyl, and the fentanyl is just being piped right in essentially by the state, the feds.
Well, fentanyl isn't a threat to the banking system,
right? No, it benefits the banking system because here's the thing: it benefits actually the whole political ruling class system. It's just the same way autism does, and all the other horrible things. So, for example, if you're a family member that has an autistic child, or an autistic brother, an autistic sister, or I'm probably going to get some backlash for looping these in the same group, or a brother or a wife or a friend or a daughter that's hooked on heroin or fentanyl or something, you're not going to pay attention to what the politicians are doing. You're not going and voting. You're not going and testifying at the state house. You don't even care.
Yeah.
Well, let's say you're not doped up. You're straight, but someone you love and care about, one of your siblings, for example, is just messed up from something. They got autism because they were vaxxed so much, or they got... you got to constantly take care of them. And it's the same thing if they're drug addicts. Like, I had a crackhead uncle. If he was anywhere around, just make sure everything was locked up. And if he just showed up at your place, you had to be like, listen, dude, get out of here, because you couldn't go anywhere until he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, if your child is a drug addict, and all your energy goes into trying to save your child, which is usually the worst thing you can do is put energy into it. You just got to kind of let them, die or whatever.
That's true, but it's also true of anybody that's just busy trying to live their life.
Yep.
I mean, the more the system can place a burden on people through, say, taxation or regulation. Addiction's a whole other level of it, but just people who are just trying to raise a family in many cases... They've made it so both parents have to work now because it's just too expensive to live life through all the raising costs. We're seeing inflation, of course, making that even more difficult on the average couple or whatever, the average family. And they're just barely getting the bills paid. They feel like they barely have time to do anything at the end of the day, right? So they sit back, they throw the television on if they have any time whatsoever, and they veg out to go through it all over again the next day. These are also people that don't feel like they have the mental space to even pay attention to what's going on.
Oh yeah, I've talked to them a lot of time, about like things that's going on. They're like, I don't even know, dude.
Yeah.
Like, if my kid was sick and my wife had to stay home from work because the kid couldn't go to school, and that's like $250 we're not going to have because she didn't go to work that day. You know, the wife's a nurse or whatever.
We're going to go to Bob. He's on the line in Tennessee, listening in Chattanooga to WGOW. Go ahead, Bob. You're on the air.
Hey, good evening. How are y'all doing up that way?
Welcome, sir.
Doing all right.
What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. I can't believe this stuff with the Russian fighter jets. They dumped all that fuel on our drone to take it down. That must have cost them a little fortune. And what suckers, man. That is a sucker play because they had to fly back to base and short their mission. So, joke's on them. But yeah,
I haven't been following that story very closely. I did see the footage where it looks almost like the drone ran into the jet, but it's really hard to tell what was going on.
So they're saying that it dumped fuel on that the jets flew by, and they dumped fuel on the drone, and that fuel then caused the drone to react and go goofy.
Well, all I know is the United States military shouldn't be outside of the U.S. territory. I mean, it should not be outside of the shores of the United States. So,
well,
I mean,
how else would they prop up the U.S. dollar so the bankers the Federal Reserve can bail out all these bankers who just gamble and gamble and gamble?
Sure. Well, the founding fathers said to keep away from these entangling alliances, and that, of course, is exactly what NATO is. It's an entangling alliance, and that's a problem that this the United States government has been having since the early 1900s.
I was talking
all the technology. You know, they've got the drones. They've got to use the technology. It's like the balloons. They float over our country. Hey, you know, who's gonna?
We don't even know if that was China.
Back to the topic that you were on regarding the taxation in the schools and the usage of that. And the property taxes. Okay. Look, this is America, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell nowadays.
The landmass is still America, but the country
is the United States,
which is a different thing, right? Like, the United States is a corporation. The United States is completely unaccountable. It doesn't stand for freedom. It doesn't stand for liberty. It's just tyranny. And America is a very beautiful landmass.
Exactly.
Well, it's also a government. Now, the corporation is a corporation. Government's a
government. America is not a government. Let's just be clear. America's not a government. Never was, never has been. It's the United States of America. Yeah.
Right. There we go. And so when we separate corporations, be they Chinese corporations or Chinese governments, corporations are businesses. Corporations, we understand. Business. Government, we also understand that. Government. And in this founding of a country, we built a government that we're saying, you know what, this government's gonna be us this time. Well, you didn't, I know, but others
you
did.
Didn't either.
We're carrying on what was started in this concept of that we're going to self-govern, that the people are going to run the government.
How'd that work
time.
out?
And we're not gonna allow kings and queens to come and forcibly take.
Well, now you have 535 kings and queens in Washington, D.C. I mean, how did the whole idea of it's the people's government work out? I mean, this isn't something that we're a part of. They rule over us. Wouldn't you say, Bob, that it's time that we broke up this experiment and we had 50 different states, 50 different nations?
Well, we kind of already do. It's just that people don't understand that the taxes that you are providing to this country, that you give them, they're not coming and taking.
Oh, we don't give anything.
No, they come and take it.
Well, if you don't give taxes, then guess what? We operate the government.
Well, then
on
use the right word. Use the right word. It's called extortion. Right.
Can
so
be.
We're not
it's
giving
good.
Them anything.
It's
they're extorting their money from us.
And actually,
especially in you guys talking about education problems. This town got all kinds of sewer issues, big time. And they do try to, if you don't pay their bill, they're very careful not to say it's a tax, but it's a tax upon a tax, and they call it a bill here. And if you don't pay that bill, they come around with a goon squad and shut your water off and harass your family, take you into
I
court,
bet they do.
Call you a liar, and then get found out.
Sounds good to me. I don't want the government water.
If this country is different from the others, it's because it is the most hegemonic, the most world policing of all of the other countries in the world. It is one of the most tyrannical. At least on the rest of the planet. For those of us that want to get out, I mean, would you be okay with us going? Let's say New Hampshire says goodbye. You know, we have ourselves a vote, and the people of New Hampshire, 70% of them vote to leave the union. You going to be okay with that?
Where are they going to go?
Well, we're just going to leave the union.
You're going to tell me that they're going to pick up the landmass.
No, we're just going to leave the union.
Basically kick feds out of the state.
Feds are going to not ever step foot in here again.
It's called secession. Surely you've heard of it.
You're talking about taking of the
property, the land.
No. You're not talking about the people. No, we already have
the property. About people. You're not talking about the people leaving the United States.
Like expatriating.
No, we're talking about the New Hampshire, the nation of New Hampshire being a nation again, separate from the United States. It doesn't mean the land goes anywhere.
Right. Okay, so you're talking about the land mass becoming its own country.
Yeah, as it once was.
Well, and what's to say it's not now?
Well, there's a bunch of criminals in Washington, D.C. who say it's not now, and they'll throw men with guns in your face if you try to say it is.
Thank you. And the key word, criminals, not representatives. Those are criminals.
They're never going to be a representative. They're always going to represent the big money. They're going to represent the big banks, the big pharmaceutical corporations.
Coming and taking your taxes out of your pocket and taking your we're going to take. That's why this country was set up on giving taxes. We give the taxes that this country can operate on, and if this country doesn't get those taxes, then it doesn't operate those criminal organizations. It doesn't fund those things because guess what? The money's not there.
I'm a little confused on what you're saying. Right, they print it, dude. They print the money. They don't have to take taxes from you. They can just turn the printing press on.
The criminals print counterfeit currency or counterfeit credit or counterfeit debts. And if you look into the
you talking about the Federal Reserve?
Hang on. If we look into the terminology of human trafficking, that also includes debt trafficking and debt bondage. This is where that is noted by good governance. That's not legal. That's not fair play. Oh, yes, it is.
No such thing.
No, the word government means the forcing minds or, you know, govern, force.
To control.
Human trafficking. Look up human trafficking and all the divisions there. You have the drug trafficking, you have the sex trafficking, you have the labor trafficking, and then you have something called debt trafficking or debt bondage. That's illegal. And this government, our people, we endorse that.
We don't endorse the
human trafficking.
No, sir. You don't speak for us.
Very anti-American.
If you want to endorse that, that's your business, but we don't endorse it, and we don't want to have anything to do with it. So, like I said, if the people of New Hampshire are ready to go their own way, and then we vote to say goodbye to the federal government, are you going to be okay with that?
If you have not already done that, which you say that you did because it was originally a nation on its own, right.
Well, we're talking about the 1700s. I wasn't around for that.
It was originally a nation on its own.
But at one time, you know, someplace it's written that it was, and we read that, and we all agreed that it was okay. So it was, and yet that didn't work out. And then we came back to the United States, and everybody said, yeah, okay. All right. And
no, it wasn't that it didn't work out. It's just that they joined the United States.
And they're going to say, well, we're going to be okay. And go give it a try. And if you
guys, so you're okay with it. That's all. I just wanted to see if you were okay with it.
Share that information around, and maybe we can all benefit from that, right?
Okay, good. Well, I hope that does work that way.
On the trafficking, labor trafficking can be for you guys, you know, having to work.
What is labor trafficking? Can you just define that for me?
Labor trafficking?
Yeah.
Well, labor trafficking as defined under this, you know, language of choice of legalese, or how they speak it, or how they've written it.
Just tell me what it is.
Labor trafficking is where you're in a position to where you're working for somebody else's profit and not your own.
Okay? That sounds like just a job.
Yeah, it sounds like a job. Are you making money, though? You're not making any money. What's the deal?
Are you getting paid for that job?
Hey. I'm all for, listen. I work for me first, right?
No, I'm just asking you a question to clarify. You're being a little obtuse. I don't know if you're doing it on purpose, but when you're saying labor trafficking, is the person who you're describing getting paid for the work they're doing when they're working for someone else, or are they a slave?
They're getting paid for
work. Okay, that's not trafficking. That's just
so they choose to work there?
Chuck in Washington, you're on Free Talk Live. By the way, the number here, 603-283-6160. Go ahead, Chuck. Hopefully you're a little more lucid than the last caller.
Well, no, I was just going to ask you, do you think that guy was a Fed?
The caller?
Because it kind of sounded like a little fishy to me. Yeah.
No, I think he's just, you know, he's just confused. You
or
know,
maybe he's just starting to figure things out.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think he understands, like, the current secession movement that's happening.
That's what feds do when they want to, like, probe you for information. They,
The feds don't even really need to probe you for information because Google collects all the metadata on everything that goes on. Your wireless carrier collects all of it. We're in a spy net. Everybody's being spied on. Everybody's being listened to. So they just, and Google's happy to give it to them whenever they want.
Usually a Fed is going to try to get you to say something violent. They want you to plot some kind of violence or go along with blowing something up or whatever, kidnapping a governor, things like
some
that.
I'm crazy.
So whenever I hear someone suggest doing some kind of violence, which there's probably been about, at least 6 or 7 times in my life where I've been at some freedom thing. One of them was in Rhode Island years ago. It was at a golf course. It was actually an event that our friend Chris Carnes put on like 15 years ago. And there was a guy that stood up there. It was at this country club there. And he's like, he was literally just dressed up the way a domestic terrorist would be dressed up according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, handout that they had, you know, back in like the early 2000s. And he's like, I got guns in my truck. He was like suggesting going to the local police station and just starting it right now. And I'm like, you're a Fed.
Yep.
You're a Fed. And he's like, if I'm a Fed, and he's like, you going to hit me, boy? And I'm like, I'm not going to hit a federal agent. Why would I, you know, do that? And he just left. He was like really upset.
So he was dressed like Osama bin Laden and yelling crazy stuff.
No, he was dressed like, you know, an American crop farmer from the Midwest. You know, he had cowboy boots on, Wranglers, a button-down shirt, and a John Deere hat on. You know, which is basically the example the Southern Poverty Law Center gave as a potential domestic terrorist.
Well, if you ever have a suspected Fed, another good thing to do is take their photograph. Try to take a picture of them, because a lot of them don't like that.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Or ask them to sign an affidavit saying they're not a federal agent.
All right, Chuck, anything else you want to share?
Their retirement. I do. There's a lot I'd like to share. But one of the things that you guys mentioned earlier in your conversation this hour was the whole drone Russian thing.
Actually, it was a caller that brought that up.
Right. And this might sound crazy. It might sound on the fringe there, but what if the United States government was trying to antagonize the Russian Federation and doing something like this because they know all the Russians are drunk, for one. They're probably drunk on vodka flying around up there.
Yeah, but that's why
they have this level of rationality when they're approaching professional circumstances.
I highly doubt he just hung up. I highly doubt the Russian fighter pilots are drunk. Jay, you brought up the sugar, what you called subsidies, and according to one of our chatters, he points out that there is the sugar minimum price set by the Fed, so it is in effect subsidized by that. However, if you think about what happens when you set minimum prices on things, you really screw up what the market is going to do, right? Like, so you essentially price people out of the market who would otherwise like to have a lower price.
So I went
for that product
on a honeymoon in 2018 down to, and one of the islands we stopped at was St. Kitts.
Oh,
so
St. Nice.
Kitts, we went on a tour, like a jungle tour, and we kind of go through, and they're like, oh, there's an old sugarcane processing facility. You can still see the chimney. And they're basically the guy, as we were going up into the, because they have a rainforest. We went on this like jungle rainforest tour. And as we were making our way up to the rainforest, he's talking about how basically the American sugar subsidies destroyed St. Kitts's sugar industry. And he was saying that sugar was like 400 and something or 500 something dollars a ton, I believe is. And I don't know if that's like a metric ton or American ton. But and anyways, he said it'd have to be about that price for there to be anybody, you know, in the sugar business to make a living. And he mentioned about, you know, that it got cheaper with, you know, the Monsanto getting involved and the, you know, Roundup and the genetic modification. And he also said sugar beets came on the market because sugar beets weren't really, you know, a mass marketable type of sugar way back when, until basically the, you know, Roundup came into it. It's just expensive to farm, but if you have it getting subsidized, it's, you know, farming makes these guys money, but they're all just subject to the government at that point. But he was saying that that's what put the sugar industry out of business in St. Kitts, basically. They've had to rely on tourism ever since because of American farm subsidies, specifically with sugar.
Right, and they can't compete because they're not allowed to, essentially. Even though they could provide the sugar for less, it's against the law.
And there's even other international things. Like every now and then, the Americans will donate like tons of corn to Ethiopia because there's so much corn is produced in America because it's so heavily subsidized.
It's more than we can handle.
It's more than we can handle, so we export tons of it. And it's, you know, and these farmers are just, you know, it's basically the taxpayers just making up the difference is what it comes down to. If you look at this farm subsidy money, and the only way to get government subsidized crop insurance, like I said, is all these, you have to spray poisons underground, you know, Roundup and stuff. And
it's a slow kill system.
And yeah, it's just making everybody terribly sick. I mean, the reason the Mississippi Delta has a dead zone in it is because of all the synthetic fertilizers and chemicals and herbicides and fungicides and all this stuff and pesticides that are, you know, put on these government subsidized farm that is required in order to get the subsidy on the crops. You have to prove that you use all this stuff. So, and the same thing, and the reason I got in to talk about subsidy is because we were talking about, you know, we shouldn't be banning sugar, for example. There shouldn't be a tax on sugar, but we shouldn't be subsidizing its, you know, its production. Because if sugar costs 10 times more than what it does now, which sort of is...
Well, it probably wouldn't. That's the thing. The point here that the Cato Institute is pointing out in a detailed policy piece, which we're not going to read all of because it's really detailed, really lengthy, published in 2018, is pointing out here that, you know, the minimum price levels are keeping the sugar prices high. So you would likely see the sugar price go down if they would get rid of these price controls on sugar and then get rid of the tariff to prevent St. Kitts and other places around the world from importing sugar into the United States, which would mean that you would see things like soda, for instance, which people shouldn't drink, but they're gonna, would actually have sugar in it again instead of high fructose corn syrup. It's the government's restrictions that have moved the market in favor of going away from sugar and going to these alternatives and substitutes.
You can get like the Coca-Cola, the glass bottle Coca-Colas, and it says Heche Mexico.
Yeah, you can get them, do they cost?
Not that much more.
They do cost more, though.
Yeah.
But cane sugar, they're smaller bottles. Yeah, it's more per ounce.
You're definitely buying the quality.
You're paying for an import.
You're paying for the quality.
It's quality, but it's also an import. You're literally getting something cross the border so you can get it. Because Coca-Cola and Pepsi won't make things with sugar here.
Right.
They point out here that for decades, the federal government has been operating a program to control the production and importation of sugar. One of the program's main purposes is to ensure minimum price levels for sugar that are typically significantly higher than those found on international markets, leading to higher costs for U.S. consumers. As a result, the federal government is, in essence, the leader of a nationwide sugar cartel. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Major.
Hey, guys. Hey. This isn't far off the mark of what you're talking about with the sugar beets and Monsanto and Roundup and whatnot. I just heard this the other day that they're going to put a whole bunch of new restrictions on anything that's labeled organic. Probably the FDA, I would imagine.
Like what?
They're trying to defend the king here.
Be a little more clear. When you say they're going to put restrictions on organics, what do you mean?
Well, evidently all through the stage of the processing and the growing and everything, they're going to make it, you know, they're giving you a whole other set of hoops you got to jump through. They're going to make it as hard as they can.
You mean for labeling? You mean in order to label something as organic, they're going to make it more difficult? Is what you're saying?
Yeah, much more difficult.
Okay.
So this is happening in a lot of areas with agriculture. So for example, there's a slaughterhouse that we used to use, and they're called Vermont Packing. And you guys shouldn't use them. They're a bunch of thieves. They swap your cattle and stuff. They don't do a good job. We've definitely had cows that were different meat, and there's been a lot of complaints. But anyways, they don't even want to deal with little guys anymore. It's a 5-cow minimum. But they've also gone to a thing where the USDA is trying to push, and like Vermont's just really happy to comply, it seems. Another reason we don't, you know, like to use that place. But they want electronic tagging in the animal from the time it's born. And basically what they want is they want to have a veterinarian on site when the animal's born. Like, so your piglets are born. And then they want to, within, you know, X amount of hours, like 72 hours of birth or something, the piglet has to be tagged with an RFID chip in the ear. And then you basically get a certificate from the veterinarian. well, this is to, you know, bring these to USDA slaughterhouses, what they want to do. So for a guy like me to do that with my animals or any small farm, that would be a massive expense. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's like $250 minimum just to get a veterinarian to show up at your place. And if you got to have them show up, you know, every time there's an animal born to, you know, tag it so you can 2 years later, if it's a cow, or, you know, 9 months later, if it's a pig, you know, send it to the USDA slaughterhouse. That's a major burden. And
sure, but if you've got a bunch of animals and you're a bigger farm, then paying $250 for one visit is not a bad, you know, not a bad deal, because then you can spread it out across the cost of all the animals.
10,000 head government subsidized, you know, feedlot operation or cattle grower or whatever, cattle producer, you have probably five veterinarians on payroll,
on staff,
you know, constantly. So yeah, they're already all set to do this and comply,
sure.
And they want an RFID system because they want the cow to walk through a chute, and they
right.
have a thing that scans it, and now they know which cow, you know, and then the gate opens up or whatever, because mm-hmm. they're just automizing AIing everything. And I mean, these chips are pretty amazing. I've dealt with some dairy farmers. 10 years ago, they had a chip in it told the cell count of the I don't know if it was like a white blood cell or red blood, some kind of count of the blood. They could tell if the cow was a little sick. It would tell their body temperature. It would tell their oxygen rate. You know, it gave them like, you know, four or five different data, you know, points on the cow. And they could tell a cow was sick before you'd ever see the
wow.
cow was sick, you know. And so it definitely does, you know, help mm-hmm. with production, just like your computer you're using now versus what the technology would be, you know, 50 years ago, for
sure.
example. But, yeah, they definitely want the government always wants to get rid of little guys because they want to control the food supply. They just want to control everything.
Major?
Yeah. I thought the ear tags were bad enough on the cattle and stock and whatnot. I used to raise pigs, too, and I remember one time about 25 years ago, I couldn't believe the price this vet spit me. He came out and inoculated all my piglets for some kind of swine something or another. I don't even remember what it was. $30. And I think I had a dozen little ones, and I think he probably even checked the mama.
$30 each?
No, $30.
Cheap.
For a house call from a doctor.
Not bad, Major.
Imagine that.
Anything else you want to share?
Oh, yeah, on this this bank scandal thing.
Yeah.
Evidently, they're feeling the ripples of this in Europe, too. There's
There's
a big Swiss organization that just got bailed out by the main Swiss bank for
yep.
$54 million. And,
did you hear about the 500 Israeli businesses that
they
tanked?
Pulled out, right?
Yeah. They pulled out?
It wasn't the Israelis. It was the Saudis, right? There was like some Saudis that pulled out of Credit Suisse, and that's one of the things that kind of kicked off this current crisis with them. That's what I heard, at least. So, like, what are some of the ways that these bankers are going to pay whatever the assessment is? Because the federal government has now guaranteed the accounts at both Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, which totals something like $300 billion and change. So, you know, and there was $128 billion apparently in the deposit insurance account. So they still got to cook up like $170 billion from the big banks. Are they just going to take it out of their savings, or are they going to start lowering interest rates on their customers?
I'd like to see what the definition of this special assessment, you know, financial instrument or vehicle is.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who's pretty good on this, I listened to his show a little bit this morning, is Tim Pichot and Josh Segersom.
Yeah.
But Josh Segersom's World Alternative Media. He does like a lot of 20-minute clips. And
he down in Mexico now?
Well, he's in Arizona. Josh is at Tim's place in Arizona.
Oh, okay.
When I was down in Arizona, we stopped by and visited him. But Tim was talking about sort of some kind of special purpose financial vehicle that was essentially just going to be another way of just creating all these dollars essentially out of thin air, sort of what they do right along anyways. And a lot of what is going to happen, just because the money is going to get sort of created out of thin air somehow, because, you know, it ain't coming out of anybody's back but the taxpayers and customers, but it will also create much more inflation.
Sure.
We're going to see we're going to see some hyperinflation, I think, very, very soon. It's going to be, you know, a bit of a ripple effect. And, you know, man, people practice barter, practice trade with people, because there's a lot of people, the only way they do anything is just swiping a card. There's even so many people just nowadays that are even like in the freedom movement, and they like never have any cash to pay for anything. They're like, you know, they're like, oh, do you take Venmo or PayPal? Or, and I'm like, no, no. You know, like somebody's coming to buy like $100 worth of hay off me and they're a free stater. And I'm like, you don't have cash?
People in the freedom movement?
Yes. Jeez. And I give them such a hard time about it. I'm like, you got to know better. I hope you don't have all your money in the bank. And, you know.
Are you still doing your fiat price raise where you give people a serious discount if they pay, or like the normal price is for people who pay with like gold or crypto, and then the cash payer's got to pay like, you know, 1.5 times that or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. I do, yes. Sort of do that. Not, I used to like promote it a real lot because I was doing like a lot of snow plowing and like landscaping stuff. But like most of my work now is pretty much for just a handful of different guys to do a lot of work for.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really given much of a discount on crypto lately because I've kind of needed dollars to pay bills.
Oh, I see.
And also like that kind of hurt when, you know, Bitcoin was at $60,000 a year ago and, you know, down now, and I had to spend a lot of it as it dropped to 40, as it dropped to 30, I'm spending it, you know, so that kind of hurt.
Signature Bank is on the market, according to Coindesk.com, after being closed by New York state regulators over the weekend. And so they're trying to find a buyer. They want to have a Chase Bank or Bank of America or something like that swoop in, buy up the accounts basically, and essentially absorb whatever
they're buying
remains.
Debt is what you're trying to say.
I guess they're buying whatever this bank's got left. I'm not sure how a bank sale goes. So I'm
yeah,
not
it doesn't
gonna...
make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's all very confusing. But
one thing I understand about these bank sales is when the government like backs them up, they basically are going to back up like the bonds that hold the system together, from what I understand. And then the bonds were originally issued at like $20, but now they're worth like two.
Mm-hmm.
But the government's still going to pay out the $20 on the bonds.
Where's that come from?
And the, you know, let's say the $18 that's missing on each bond, you know, there's trillions of these bonds and they're all, you know, different values and whatnot. But they is basically all that money has just been stolen by the bankers. So like, you know, The thing is with these banks is, Max Kai, I can't remember the quote now, but he's basically like, banking, it's where, you know, they steal 6% all the time. And then it just, you know, the 6% just keeps adding up and adding up and adding up and adding up. And eventually it becomes everything. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's a crazy like house of financial cards. And again, how far away are we from a total collapse? Hard to say. But for right now, they are looking to sell this one bank. Of course, it comes after the failure of Silicon Valley Bank, which also came less than a week after the voluntary closure of Silvergate Bank, which was another California bank, which also was a highly crypto-friendly bank. So Silvergate went under after the FTX fiasco, because FTX had an account with Silvergate and had some sort of dealings with them, and then the other exchanges left Silvergate. They saw the writing on the wall, basically, and said, all right, well, we better close our account and go find somewhere else to bank. And then Silvergate just ended up closing. Signature Bank, whose crypto clients accounted for a quarter of its deposits, was reportedly under investigation by the Department of Justice and the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission for potentially lax monitoring that may have enabled money laundering. A class action lawsuit was filed against Signature Bank in February, alleging the bank knew about and facilitated the now infamous FTX fraud. Specifically, the suit accuses Signature Bank of having knowledge of and permitting, quote, the commingling of the FTX exchange customer funds with its proprietary blockchain-based payments network, Signet. Many in the crypto industry, including a former comptroller of the currency, the one-time Binance U.S. CEO Brian Brooks, have speculated the closure of these three banks is indicative of a coordinated effort by government regulators to choke the cryptocurrency industry off from the banking system. Barney Frank, who you may remember used to be a U.S. representative, I think.
From Massachusetts.
Actually, that's not how I recognize him. He's a guy that used to help run Boys Town and Diddle Kids, but that's another story. I mean, that's the main story about him, but go ahead.
Could very well be. For now, he was on the Signature Bank board, And he suggested the takeover was spurred by an anti-crypto motive, telling CNBC that Signature Bank was solvent and that regulators intervened anyway in order to send a message. He said, I think part of what happened was regulators wanted to send a very strong anti-crypto message. So he says, and he's on the board of directors, hey, our bank was solvent. They just came in to take us because they wanted to, essentially. Now, who knows what the truth is there?
I don't believe there's any bank that's solvent.
Maybe
any at all.
But it's awfully suspicious that you have three banks going down in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and at least two of them were highly involved in cryptocurrency accounts.
Yeah.
One of them, Silicon Valley Bank, wasn't known for being crypto friendly, but it's certainly tech sector friendly. So there may have had some crypto.
I'm just going to say that it's best not to speculate and just take your cash out, because speculating is thinking that the government is going to solve the issue on this.
No, they're not.
So don't speculate. Just take your money out.
They might kick the can down the road a little bit. But here's the other thing. Apparently, the Department of Financial Services in New York has denied that crypto had anything to do with its decision to shutter Signature Bank, saying instead it was due to a quote-unquote crisis of confidence in the bank's leadership. Now, I don't know why they don't mention it in this story.
Crisis of confidence? But people didn't trust them anymore?
It's not clear what that even means.
It just
sounds
like a workaround of words of, people don't trust the banks anymore.
We got Sarah on the line in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Oh, I finally met up with a Mary Kay lady who was an executive director, and she even had a pink car. So
Are they
going to really
convince you
one.
To join the Mary Kay Network Marketing Organization since you're now a professional network marketer?
She got a job?
Well, you know something? She invited me. Well, it's a $20 membership, and the thing is that, and then, you
she
know,
what?
That's,
Your membership? I'm sorry, I missed what you said there.
No, she offered me, and they were going to have me that little thing, that little computer tablet that you could scan a card, you could make payments. She wanted to know if I wanted to sign up with them, because those
trying
products
to poach
work
you.
Really well with me.
Did you tell her that you already have a network marketing company, and did you tell her about who you're working for?
Oh, yeah. And then, you know something? And then she found out. She asked me, goes, don't you get one of those boxes that they just send you? And I told her that you only get that backup order when you forget to order by the end of the month. And she was chuckling. She thought it was just so silly.
Oh, so she thinks her company's better than your company.
Yeah, but her mother has diabetes. Stuff to help.
That's
diabetes.
A good reason to buy in, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Their specialty is just makeup. They do the makeup very well.
Okay,
and
so they don't have the potions
product.
And the pills. They just have makeup. Sorry, Jay. One more try. Go ahead.
Oh, what is Sarah's company?
There's no laundry products. They have no air freshener. They have no laundry products. Mm-hmm. They don't have any home cleaning products. They don't have any super high-quality vitamins. And then we have shakes that
so
help.
So you're
diabetes.
Saying your company is better than her company.
What's Sarah's company?
It's one of those network marketing companies.
Is it Doterra? I went to her because we do have a makeup line, but it doesn't
fit my color.
That's
essential oils, right?
That's a problem. I went to her because I don't have the color that matches me. So
Sarah,
that's what I found
her. Do you know what your makeup's made out of? Is it like healthy ingredients, like guano?
Well, you know what? Look at it. Our makeup is really good. It feels good on the skin, but they have 15 colors for white women. If this whole company caters, most of their clients are white women. They don't have much.
That sounds kind of racist, don't you think?
Darker skin. What?
Sounds kind of racist, don't you think?
Well, I have no idea. Well, the founder is a white guy. So I don't know if that has to do with it.
Is he gay?
You're no, the, come
I,
on.
I know
gay straight men that wear makeup.
Look at it. He is up by, like, Idaho Falls. There's a lot of Mormon influence. He's Mormon. So the thing is,
but that
I don't
doesn't
know
mean
if
he's not gay, right?
I have no idea. Most of the company people that
I mean,
went,
he could be in the closet.
The company,
if he's a Mormon, he could be a gay in the closet. I mean, what kind of straight guy forms a makeup company?
Actually, Sarah, if you find out he's gay, does that change your mind about being invested in this company?
I'll tell you what kind of guy forms a makeup company.
Well, you know what? Look at that. He's in makeup because there's money in makeup. Women go nuts. They spend billions of dollars every year
That's
on makeup.
True.
And look
that
at
is
me.
True.
So the kind
I can't look at you. We don't know what you look like.
The kind of guy that starts cosmetic companies are the ones that usually have to deal with the waste from the slaughterhouses.
Really?
Yeah. So like Johnson & Johnson Corporation, they were basically were started because in Chicago, you know, years ago, they had this whole slaughterhouse district. And what they and the story goes, the guy was like, oh, look at all this animal fat and lard just getting dumped into the river out of all the slaughterhouses because they don't know what to do with it.
So they can turn that into makeup?
We need to turn that into something. So now what they have is they have a rendering process where all the guts and everything that's, you know, just all the stuff that gets thrown out that you're not going to eat or whatever from the slaughterhouse goes into like these rendering tanks. And then these companies like Baker Industries is one. They're out of Southwick, Massachusetts. And they go haul this stuff and they bring it back to their facility and they refine it, they process it into, and then they extract all, you know, separate it all and extract it. And a lot of it is used for making makeup.
All right, Jay, you were telling us a story about campers. We were discussing how apparently the market, there's a ton of campers inventory available right now, but a couple of years ago, it was just barely any were available.
So basically,
people were camping out at like Walmarts, and apparently they still are.
Oh yeah.
Right now, you're saying in some Walmarts, I don't see it here I guess the Walmart in Keene doesn't own its plaza, so maybe that's why I don't see it here in Keene. But you guys are seeing it out in Manchester.
I've seen it here in Keene.
Concord.
Sorry, in Concord.
Yeah, I didn't notice any in Manchester, but definitely Concord. The same handful of rigs been there for a while.
Now, so what were you were going to tell us a story about a camper?
I was on my way home from a little vacation I took with the family, and it was late at night, and the truck started having issues, so I was able to limp it into a park and ride, and it's the park and ride that's between, it's at Bow, New Hampshire.
And for listeners, a park and ride is where people can park like all day and then carpool somewhere. It's like a government piece of property.
Yeah, it's basically just like you could throw a baseball from the toll booth on the, from the 93 there where it's a toll road. So basically, if you're going south out of Concord, you go through the tolls. It's the first exit after the tolls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think it's Bow 3A. And right in front of, right in the toll, when you're at the toll booth, you can see this park and ride. It's up on a hill. So I get my truck into there. I had some fuel issues. And as I'm messing around with the truck, I had to change the fuel filter.
This is nighttime?
This is nighttime. Okay. It was like, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. It was hot out. So this guy rolls in there, kind of a mechanic guy coming home from his job, and he's, just talking to me. He's helped me out a little bit. And I'm like, what's up with all these campers? And it's like hot out. There's like there's air conditioners and generators running.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh yeah, they've been here for months. Because some of these guys been, spent all winter here.
Really?
And there's like six or seven campers and there's a whole bunch of cars just parked in this parking lot. And usually it's pretty full during the day and they're like not many at night. And there's vans. And he's like, oh, see that U-Haul van over there? That's not a U-Haul van, but their guys are living in it, and because it just looks like a U-Haul van, he's got no windows or nothing, and it's everybody leaves, but he called it a stealth camping van. And he's like, I'm like, so nobody's kicked him out of here? He goes, nope. He goes, the cops are wicked cool. He says, basically, as long as there's, like, nobody doing crazy stuff, or doesn't turn into, like, a drug den, and then as soon as somebody shows up in his park and ride who's trouble, they just kick them right out. Like the people that are already there, they're like, nope, we don't want you here. Like some, he was saying that there was like some heroin addict was like passed out in his car, and they're like, they're like, you can't come in here. We got your plate number. We're going to report you to the police. And the cops are like, yeah, if there's like a troublemaker here, we'll come take care of him. And the guy doesn't live there, but he lives down the road, but he drives by all the time, and he knows a bunch of the people there. And he goes, yeah. He goes, like, they're just good people who got jobs, and they got families. But
they just don't want to pay the rent.
When your rent goes from, $1,500 a month to $3,000 a month, they just get evicted from their apartments, and they just buy a camper and live in a camper in a park and ride.
That's sort of a parking lot camper governing rule. Is like this nature to it. And it happens not just there. It happens everywhere across the country where there's, like, free RV parking. There is sort of like this culture around how they govern it, and it wasn't unheard of when you said that they sort of regulate like the bad troublemakers and stuff. Kick them out.
And when I went down to Arizona in February and early February, I was in Arizona for a couple of weeks, and I stopped to see Ernie Hancock and Bob Anderson. And just behind that's Tonopah, Arizona, and out by where Ernie was going to buy some property, he drove by a place that's all BLM land. And so you can go on BLM land with your camper for
Bureau of Land Management.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can go for like 14 consecutive days, and then you got to like move your camper.
Mm-hmm.
So like a lot of so he said basically 2020, as soon as it started like getting all the lockdowns and thing, everybody came from like California and all the cities.
Yep.
And he said it was like hundreds of campers just, you know, you drive down this road from Bob's house, like 6 or 7 miles, come around the corner, it's the BLM land, and it's just campers everywhere. And when I was drove by there, we saw like probably about 7 or 8 campers just randomly out in the desert in this one little area. And but yeah, they said it was just covered with campers. And then there wasn't really any problems. Like the cops weren't there. Nobody was really bugging them. And
so they had to stay. They could stay for 14 days, but then they'd get moved along. Basically,
have to go to nobody another. Was really enforcing anything mm-hmm. over it because there was hundreds
too
of campers.
In theory, in you probably could move your truck a full trailer and truck length,
yep.
and then that would be another 14
it.
Days.
I yep. see.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.